Welcome to the Today's Leader podcast. Building tomorrow's best leaders, today.
Way to go, guys. Way to go. Keep it going. Good job, guys. All right, Paul, I see you.
All right, John, let's finish. Coach Carl.
And it's my pleasure to welcome to the Today's Leader podcast, Building Tomorrow's Best Leaders Today. Please welcome Laurie Smith. How are you today, Laurie?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
I'm really good. It's still early morning for us over here in Australia, so I'm still just feeling my way into the day, I guess. So, but it's not about me, it's about you. So let's have a quick chat. What's the Laurie Smith story?
My story starts when I was about 6 or 7 years old. I was playing make-believe in the backyard with some friends, and I believe they got tired of the story and wanted to go off and play, and I stayed to finish the story. And eventually my mother discovered me back there, took me to a little theater group, and I've been an actor ever since.
Okay.
Fast forward about 20 years after that, and I was working as an executive assistant here in the Silicon Valley and acting at night, and felt a call to go toward a more aligned life instead of feeling like I was one person during the day and another person at night. So I left that executive assistant job and went to get a graduate degree in theater, and felt like I was born a leader.
Yeah.
And knew that even at 5 years old, but had resisted it and had been kind of a reluctant leader for most of my life.
Yeah.
And I had an experience in an acting class shortly before going to get my graduate degree. Oddly enough, you know, my favorite acting instructor was not during that graduate degree. It was someone else before that. We were doing an exercise when the whole class was focused on me, whereas ordinarily you would be partnered up with a partner, and it was like the two of you were working on complementary things.
Yeah.
On this one day, the whole class was focused on me, and I kept trying to kind of pull myself together to be fine in between the scenes. And eventually my acting instructor paused the scene, as he had to do with me so many times over the years, and said, stop doing that thing where you try to like be fine and pull yourself together. Just be where you are. Come from what's actually true for you. And I responded, I'm not that comfortable having everyone's eyes on me. And then he took off his glasses and said, then you've picked a strange set of careers for yourself. You're an actor and a teacher, a leader. Part of you wants this. Part of you knows you're meant to be here. And part of me knew he was right. And I deeply trusted and respected him. So I quit trying to pull it together and did this exercise, laughing hysterically 1 minute, crying hysterically the next. And I felt like layers of protection were melting away. And by the time the exercise was over, I looked out at all of my classmates, and I felt like I could tell you what kind of day, what kind of emotional state every single one of them was in, and what kind of day they were having.
Wow.
It was my first moment of what felt like oneness without being in character. I had them all the time as an actor.
Yeah.
And that led to experiences of finding my voice in graduate school and then coming out the other side, starting a business, where I realized I wasn't meant to do this exclusively with actors. I was actually drawn to leaders, some of whom over the years have been actors, but they don't tend to be the actors who want my help with something to go get cast in a sitcom. They tend to be the ones that are starting theater companies or starting some kind of movement through theater. And I work with a lot of visionaries who have some kind of soul-driven mission, helping them to remove the energetic armor and the emotional masks in order to be seen so that they can lead from their true selves, just like I did.
Yeah, and listening to that story, that's phenomenal. I mean, just the courage to shift career into fundamentally what was really the unknown by acknowledging that there was almost like those two separate identities within yourself. I think that there would be a large amount of people that would actually have that within their lives, and then looking at how we can unify and align those with our true self, I think is an amazing, courageous thing to do. And then the incident within the class, all eyes on me scenario, once again, just that realization. So I take it at that stage you picked up that you could feel empathy, that you had some intuition as to how others were feeling.
Yeah, and I believe I have my entire life, but it was part of what was getting suppressed from trying to, you know, hold up the I'm fine mask all the time. Yeah. I'm looking back now, it's shocking. When I know how I was when I was a young child, and I know where I am now, I just turned 50. That was somewhere around like 30. I know the beginning and I know where I am now, and it's almost shocking that I ever was able to suppress so much that I didn't know just how much empathy I feel. And of course I found my way to acting, because if you have empathy, you can play all types of characters.
Yeah.
And have them be real, not caricatures.
Yeah. But we're taught to cover up, aren't we? We're taught to put on the brave face, to soldier on, to be someone that people sees as calm while everything's falling, everything around us is falling down. How do we overcome that? Because, you know, I'm just thinking about myself from a personal leadership perspective. There was never any leadership training that I had in my corporate career that sort of said, well, you know, even if we were to teach the word vulnerable today, I was never taught to be vulnerable as a leader. So why is it that this is part of the what I would call the facade that we try and put up in and around ourselves?
Yeah, I feel that our Western world is consciously and unconsciously teaching us to put up that facade, to wear the emotional masks and have that armor. Sometimes it's because it's what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
So without talking about it, we all just start doing what everyone else is doing. And sometimes we're getting messages as children and young adults, don't be too loud, don't take up too much space, don't be too emotional. And the emotional one, it can be different for men and women. And it's happening for everyone, man, woman, non-binary, you know, we're all being told don't be too emotional. So we have to suppress in order to try not to be too this or that.
Yeah, it's interesting when you were to I would be fascinated to see some of the results that you get with people. So you're talking about being, you know, part of what you do with the Voice Matters is part of that whole providing people the opportunity to be themselves and to be able to speak confidently in that arena. Have I got that right in relation to your business?
Yeah, I help leaders who speak.
Yeah.
Access their most vibrant and alive, confident, charismatic selves, and then take that out into the world so that they can show up that way in any situation. I believe presence begins where primal and purpose meet.
Yeah.
So when I was 5 years old, I had a lot of primal. I had a lot of aliveness in my body. If my mom said you can't have any more candy on Halloween, wildly alive from head to toe and emotionally expressive, but there was no purpose there. Then we get taught to suppress it, and where I come in is to help people reconnect to their whole selves, body, mind, soul, and connect that to a sense of purpose, some mission, some vision, so that the doesn't get channeled into I want more candy. It gets channeled into something like I want peace on earth or whatever it might be.
So how do you work with some the person that says, that's not me, I'm not charismatic, I'm not naturally inspirational or influential or even outgoing? So many people I would imagine are sitting there saying, oh, I'm an introvert, that's me, I keep it all inside and that's who I am. So how do you work with someone like that, or what are the steps that they can be looking to take to actually appreciate the fact that they were initially, I love one of your messages on your website. It says everyone is born with charisma. I love that because you can see that there's some real truth in relation to that. But along the journey, we tell ourselves something different. So what are some of the steps that maybe that internalized person can start to take to embrace their best you in relation to charisma and presence?
One step that is very helpful, so I get this all the time. People will come into a group program of mine thinking that everyone else is charismatic in the room except for them. So sometimes there's magic in the group because eventually everyone in the group realizes that everyone else is thinking that everyone else is charismatic except for them. And then there's a, oh, if I think all five of you are charismatic and all five of you are also thinking I'm not charismatic, uh-oh, maybe I am. Maybe I am a leader. Along the way, I ask people to focus on the emotional journey that they want for their listeners. So if you've decided to get up and speak for some mission or vision that you believe is important, and there's a part of you that's thinking, I'm not up to the mission, I'm not a leader, I'm not charismatic, but I'll do it because I'm called to, or I'll do it because I'm so important. It's so important. I'm standing there saying, if there's 7.8 billion people on the planet, there are 7.8 billion different flavors of charisma. They still might not believe me. Then I'll kind of get into humor me and focus on the emotional or energetic journey or transformation that you want in your listeners. And start watching and feeling the vibe. Watch the nonverbals, the facial expressions, and feel the vibe in the room. Moment by moment, word by word, breath by breath, for signs of that transformation happening. And that kind of gets people out of their own way because they're not worried about how much they think they're not charismatic. They're busy doing it. Breathing is also really key to essentially when someone told us, don't be too emotional, and we suppress our breathing. And then we try to get our voice across the room, and it's not the organic, alive way we were born to do it. When people start learning to breathe and to expand their energy to fill a space, those are the kinds of things that unlock their innate charisma. And I have a prop that I love to use. It's like we've been told to show up like this when we're all capable of this. And if I didn't stop it, it would keep on going. That's humans to me.
Excellent. And what a great visual, and what a, I mean, that's impactful. So, and I think it's just so important that leaders need to be authentic in the way that they express themselves. So I'm also imagining there's people listening to this and thinking that, you know, the old saying, you got to fake it till you make it. So, yes, I want to fake being charismatic so my team will see that I'm an inspirational type leader. But I'm imagining that's just as dangerous by not embracing your true self.
Yeah, this is eerie timing. I just led a workshop today where we spoke about the fake it till you make it phrase. It is not my favorite phrase. It's one of my least favorites. And I asked the group that was in the workshop today to consider replacing fake it till you make it with faith it till you make it.
Okay.
Like, have faith in yourself and do a couple of physical things so that you have an embodied sense of confidence, which leads to charisma.
Yeah.
Confidence is a practice, not a destination.
Yeah.
And it lives in the body, not the mind.
Yeah.
But saying fake it till I make it is different than faith it till you make it and try a couple of body things that will eventually make you feel more charismatic, more confident.
Yeah.
And then the thoughts are kind of the last thing to come.
Yeah. So it's that belief that it's there, as opposed to, I don't believe it's there, so I'm going to put on a facade. So that belief that it's there, and then we start to fundamentally, the more we do it, the more we practice, the more we prepare, the more confident we are that it's actually going to work out. I've seen leaders, you know, during my career, and I guess in some ways I loved an audience. I loved to hold those team meetings. I'd love to present to people. Part of what I do today is all about that presentation. It's all about being in front of people and being able to express, I guess, who I am in that particular way. But I've also seen some real introverted leaders come alive in that. It's almost like they've got those two personas, and one is very introverted and very deep and very detailed, and then you put them in front of a group of people to influence, and all of a sudden they become this other person. Is that a positive thing? Is that a positive or a negative, I guess, in the understanding of who they are?
I feel like we're in a time where we need more introverts leading. Not that introversion or extroversion, not, you know, 7.8 billion people, 7.8 billion types of charisma. And yet what I believe is we need some of the introverts, the intuitives, the empaths, the highly sensitive people, the outcasts, because we have a very different perspective that has not been being heard. And what an introvert can do with more ease when they're speaking and leading is they can make the audience feel seen and heard and understood, even when they're the one talking. Once I work with them, or once they know, like, your ability to listen can be happening when you're the one on the stage, and it will make people feel like you were talking just to them, because in a way you are. You're listening to the crowd in a way that is not as innate, perhaps, to an extrovert. Not that the extrovert can't learn it, but it's not innate to them.
I'm just trying to picture that myself, because it sort of flows into what I would, into the question that I was thinking about, and that concept of having your intuition and being an empath, say, for example. Is that something that's a leader can develop within themselves, or is that a natural skill set that you've either got it or you don't?
I feel like it is something that a leader can develop, and I even have a colleague who believes we're actually all empaths.
Okay.
It's just varying degrees of how much have you suppressed it.
Yeah.
During the course of your life. I'm not sure if I completely agree with her, and yet if I look at my life, when I was in my 20s, most people would not have thought I was an empath. I did not know what it was, even though I was acting.
Yeah.
But those were not the years where I was really tapped into my innate gifts, even as an actor. And then between 30 and 50, I embraced it and I cultivated. And I mean, who knows where it's going to go as I continue to get older and older. I know about in 2019, the very end of the pandemic, I was understudying a show, and I went on 2 days after the first understudy rehearsal.
Yeah.
And we didn't even finish the show. And people were shocked at how well it went. And then kind of started to ask me, like, how did you do that in 2 days? And my first response was, well, I didn't really do it in two, you know, I was doing work before the understudy rehearsal. And then as I sat with it, I realized it was my empath skills that really was, it wasn't just I stood up there and I said the lines.
Yeah.
When I watched the show with the primary actress in it, I was seeing where she moved, but I was also feeling everything about her performance.
Yeah.
So it was like cheating on a test. I don't need to have a conversation with her. I can feel her choices. I can feel what she's doing. And when I got up in front of the crowd, I tapped into the crowd. Instead of like, ah, I'm an understudy on in front of a crowd, I tapped into them and was riding their energy and timing things off of their energy in a state of surrender. And the stage manager came up to me and said, you landed every joke. You had the audience in the palm of your hand. How? And I thought, because I was riding their energy. It was the oneness thing kind of coming back around.
Yeah.
If I had gone on stage in that kind of an understudy position when I was 25 years old, that is not how it would have gone. So I grew it.
Yeah.
Whether it was innate to me or it's innate to everyone is kind of a great discussion I love having with people. And I know we can grow it or re-tap into it.
Yeah. It's sort of like the performance became an extension of what you were feeling or what you were sensing from the actor on stage, and then it was a case of it flourishing with that extension of your feeling. So that's a great story. You help leaders in many ways to be present, and pardon me, but you mentioned presence is when purpose and
primal
and purpose
presence begins.
So how do you work with leaders in relation to that? I mean, and what does truly being present mean? What it, like, we, once again, it's something we hear all the time. As a coach, we have to be present. You know, as a leader, if I'm talking with my team, I've got to be present. But what does it truly mean? And what are, once again, some little tips that you can provide to leaders to help that?
Yeah. Presence means listening to the people that you're in the room with, not going off in thoughts about what they just said or did, what I just said or did, or the future. What are they going to say next? It's really listening and responding in the moment. It's being alive from head to toe, physically and energetically, which comes through the breath.
Yeah.
And when I work with leaders to really breathe, to nourish the sound of their voice, that's when they start saying that all that other noise went away, because you speak, I breathe, I speak back. then you speak and I'm listening to what you're saying. And it's kind of the breath that helps the leaders themselves feel like they've come into presence. And they have the mental space to be listening to what's coming from the audience or the other people that they're talking to, even one-on-one.
Yeah. That's a, I'm just visualizing that as you were speaking, and it's really quite a fascinating process. But I could imagine as a leader, just that little bit of focus on our breath is probably a really good thing. So, and maybe that's something that people can start doing today. So, this is just fascinating stuff to me. So who's been part of the inspiration for you as you've traveled down your leadership journey?
Oh, there have been so many. Some you've heard of, some you probably haven't heard of. I came across Brené Brown right kind of at the beginning of her career, yeah, and right at the right time for me, because vulnerability and shame spirals, and that's all very connected to what I'm bringing as well. Some of my clients are huge inspirations to me. Many of them are in what they're bringing to the world. That's kind of the range from, you know, someone that I've never personally met to people that I work with, where I'm supposed to be helping them, and I hope I am, and they're inspiring me with what they're up to on this planet. Yeah,
great way to answer. What about failure? What's your relationship like with our ability as humans to perceive or to see ourselves as failures along the journey? What's your relationship like? Yeah.
Well, I feel like I have two parts of me. One part is really great at failure, more of my soul self or my higher self. And then there's my inner teenager who resists it, doesn't want it to happen, you know, wants to not really look at it. And those two parts are still inside of me. When I'm at my best, it's like my soul, my higher self sees failure as something that doesn't have a capital F on it. It's just, that didn't work. What didn't work about it? Learn, take the next step. It's very simple. And, you know, there are great leaders out there who say you learn more. I don't remember who right now in this moment, but you learn more from the failures than you do from the successes. Yep. And my soul self really gets that.
Yeah. There's a real belief from people who look at a successful person and think that they've succeeded the whole way through, but fundamentally success comes after a culmination of learnings and failures. And it is something that's really true. Once again, I like the concept of failure with a capital F, but for some people they put failure in all caps, so to them it's just something that stops them. So it's a really great way that you've described that, Laurie. So if I was to ask what the vision is for you and what it is that how you work with leaders, what does that look like?
My vision is a world where it's almost like the human race is a vocal orchestra. And what has been happening is that some of the instruments are not playing.
Okay.
Or they're playing very quietly, and other instruments are trying to play louder to make up for like the silent string section. And my vision for the world is a world where everyone is expressing their purpose through their voice, showing up, speaking in dynamic conversations and from stages. They're bringing the magic that they're meant to bring and speaking at full voice, so that everyone can play like a well-tuned orchestra in order to reach global harmony, instead of having the disharmony that we've been in for so long.
Yeah. Once again, you've got a beautiful way to phrase that, Laurie. So, you know, the concept of the orchestra, and, you know, I'm a bit of a sporting fan, and we often see in sporting teams, you'll see one or two players when the team isn't playing to their structure or to their best, you'll see one or two players go out of their way to try and have more effort and do too much, and then that becomes ultimately detrimental to the team performance. So it's so likening it to an orchestra, if you couldn't hear the wind section and the rhythm section decided, no, I've got to play more now, it's almost ludicrous to think that that would happen. So I think that once again is a great visualization. So Laurie, how can people connect with you? I've got no doubt that there'll be a number of people saying, I need to learn more about what this what Laurie speaks of. How can they connect with you?
The easiest place to connect with me is my website. It's voice-matters.com or voice-matters.com. I am on Instagram, I am on Facebook, I am on LinkedIn, and I just can't remember how to tell you what my handles are for all of those off the top of my head, whereas my website is easier.
Yeah, no worries. I'll make sure that we have all those links in the show notes, Laurie. So. And I'll make sure that your LinkedIn and your social media handles are on there as well. Laurie, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you so much for investing in today's leaders.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.